It's time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
Hello! Welcome back to another episode of The Nonprofits, the show where we discuss news and topics of the day from a skeptical humanist perspective. I am Laura McGee, and I am joined today with two very special friends of mine, co-hosts ex-Christian Aaron and Nate Smith. I am honored to be on a panel with these two fine individuals, and I hope you are as excited to see or hear what they have to say as I am. All right. I lost myself there for a moment, but it's nice to have you on with you guys again. It's kind of been a while since I've hosted, and to have you two on as my co-host is very exciting. So welcome. Thank you guys for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having us back.
I'm glad to be back on with you, Laura. It's been way too long.
It has been a hot minute. Just as a reminder to everybody else, this show is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the separation of religion and government and promoting positive atheism. Today, we are going to talk about a prosperity pastor trying to get good with God, an anti-abortion gone awry, and a couple who loves love, but not LGBTQ love. So this should be an exciting show today, and there's lots to talk about. As with all of our shows, links to today's topics and the news we discuss are available in the description below. And as a reminder, if you want to come into the show prepared, you can always check out the nonprofit's Facebook fan page every Friday night for a list of the articles ahead of time. Now, we're going to move on to segment one, and Nate is going to lead us into Shit Internet Apologists Say.
Shit Internet Apologists Say.
Oh, this one's a shocker, folks. Would you believe it that a man whose name sounds more like the villain from a canceled Disney Plus superhero series, Mr. Creflo Dollar, may not have been completely honest? Who would have thought? Knock me over with a feather. So we've got a couple articles. One is from blackenterprise.com, the other from moguldom.com, but basically detailing a long and rambling sermon by one Creflo Dollar. You may remember him from such sermons as "Give me $65 million so that I can buy a jet," and "You can't stop me from dreaming." But yes, it turns out that he has had a change of heart, and he's just now become familiar with the whole New Covenant thing. Apparently, he's been preaching for 30 years, but this is news. Not news to me, but apparently it is to him. So, ladies, I tried to watch this sermon. I really did. I couldn't do it. I made it about 20 minutes in, and I was just like, okay, I think I got the gist of it. It was like if you took a Barack Obama speech, subtracted his charisma and character, and sprinkled it with some magic words, but not cool ones like accio, critical thinking. No, just... just very mundane. It's so boring. Like, I haven't been to church in 20 years, and I was getting flashbacks. It was a bit triggering. So I had to shut it off. But the one thing you before I turn it over to you, go ahead, Laura.
I was just going to say you made it further than I did. I made it a few minutes in, and then I skipped around from part to part to see. Yeah, I kind of like fast-forwarded, listened to a minute or two, fast-forwarded again. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
How far did you make it, Aaron?
I not at all. I just read the text.
You didn't even watch it. Yeah.
She knew okay, better. Fair.
She's the smartest that's of fair. All three of us.
I just found where the words were, and I just quickly skimmed over it, and I was like, okay, I got it. And
then, you dodged a bullet. Yeah, you dodged a bullet. Yeah. And the one thing that stuck out to me was in the first few minutes when he's doing his unpology, in the same sentence that he, you know, the only admission of wrongdoing was that he's still growing. You know, he's a human being. But then he also uses the phrase, "I won't apologize and I won't be ashamed. Like, I think you missed out on the whole remorse part there, Mr. Dollar, you know? What was your lady's take from this?
So I found it was like refreshing to see that like a mega church and mega wealthy pastor was publicly admitting some sort of fault. It's very rare that we see that. Like, to say to their huge following, millions of people who have followed this person over the years, that they made a mistake and that they've maybe misinterpreted the scripture. I can give very small brownie points for like good job on doing a little bit of self-reflection and realizing that you may have led people astray. There you go. Brownie points. My problem is that it's like, how many years too late? How many people has he taken advantage of over however many years? I wasn't aware of this pastor beforehand. I'm aware of these types of pastors, and typically like seeing like this humility of like, I'm a sinner and I'm constantly growing. Like, that's not a completely like abstract idea of these pastors to do, but to take fault and then do something further to atone for their actions. I'm wondering if this went far enough, if he is taking responsibility for maybe his misreading of scripture, if there is, you know, such a thing as a, you know, the correct interpretation of scripture, but has he done enough to atone for his behavior? Has he offered any kind of a refund to the people who have donated hundreds and thousands of dollars? And generally, this is a population of people who probably didn't have the funds to be donating at this time. I believe at one point it was, he had said something like there was everybody in his entire following needed to donate $300 each so that he could buy the $65 million jet. $300 might not seem for like a lot for a lot of people, but for some people, that's the difference of their groceries that month. So I'm wondering where is the action for, you know, atonement or reconciliation in his behavior. So I'm just going to put a suggestion out. If he's going to watch this, maybe sell the jet, break it up, offer some refunds for all the people who have contributed to your ministry over the years. Might be a good start.
Oh, Aaron, he's not watching this. Come on.
Well, just in case, okay. If anybody in this, you know, in our audience happens to forward it to him, it's just my humble suggestion as another humble sinner from one sinner to the next. This is my suggestion. Maybe just take some steps towards, you know, atoning for what you've done wrong. The other thing that I found very interesting about this whole situation was when I went to look at to see how the broader Christian community is responding to this, is that I saw a lot of other church leaders condemning him for his change of mind. First of all, for going back on his kind of interpretation, like that changing your mind on something scriptural is not typically accepted very much in these different denominations. So the whole idea that he changed his mind is already taboo in its own. But the thought that other communities may actually like this message might spread that you don't need to be contributing 10% of your income weekly is a very threatening thing for a lot of these pastors. So I saw sermons. So yes, I didn't watch the original sermon because I just couldn't go through it, but I did skip through a couple of response sermons to it. And I saw a few condemning him as a follower of Satan, as being aligned with Molech and like, you know, these other kind of more dodgy biblical characters, and that his new teaching on tithing is straight up satanic. And I found that fascinating. Molech,
isn't that a character from Skyrim? Is that the one guy that makes you kill the priest? I think it is.
Yeah, so any way you look at it, it's a very high condemnation on his new teaching. And I see this as like the most obvious point ever. People who are a part of these other communities who may have some cross reference like with their audience, they don't want that message spreading, because essentially what he has gone back on is saying that you don't need to contribute 10% of your income to tithing, because as far as my understanding is that under this New Testament, under the grace theology, is that the 10% tithing teaching is an Old Testament teaching. So his revelation that he's had is that it's not absolutely mandatory that you contribute 10% of your wealth. So, I mean, like I said before, that's a great revelation. I'm glad that he had it. It's probably going to save a lot of people from like monthly discomfort in their finances. But I think it's interesting, funny, and not surprising at all that other major church leaders are condemning him as being satanic for that, because it's threatening. It's threatening to their own wealth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's actually more socially acceptable within Christian circles to have a different teaching than you, but stick to it. And that way they can just say, well, they interpret it differently or they're wrong, than for them to change their mind. Because you're right. There's this belief among religious groups that questioning or changing your mind or being skeptical or any sort of like curiosity or critical thinking should be just shut down and should not happen. So for someone to change their mind, it means they're reflecting, they're asking questions, they're bringing their own mind into it instead of just trusting God. So it's one thing to have somebody just say, oh, well, I think this is differently, like I interpret this differently than you. And then you can just say something like, well, you're just not inspired by God, or, well, you're a human, you're flawed or whatever. And they have all these mm-hmm. justifications for why they disagree, but it's almost acceptable when you yeah. agree at one point.
That's such a
and
good
then
point.
Your mind.
There's these lines drawn in the sand, right? And it's okay, whatever. You're on this side and I'm on this side and they're on this side. And this is where the lines are. But when somebody draws closer to a different edge, right? Like you're not, that's not mm-hmm. really, that's not allowed. You're not allowed to like kind of shift your theology willy-nilly, as you know, that's how
you just can't.
If I'm remembering it correctly from my own experience in church, like our church had this theology and the other church had their theology. And if either one of us were to like make a big change in the middle, now it really confuses the borders between who us and them. And you're just really not supposed to be questioning these things, because these are biblical principles. They are once and for all. They're timeless there. So it does a lot for discrediting many different areas of the religion.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you brought up two different things at once. Like you brought up the negative backlash from other pastors, but then you also brought up the, well, if you're really sorry and you changed your mind, why aren't you issuing a refund? Because one of the pastors did call him out on that. He said, until Surflow Dollar has a Zacchaeus spirit, which involves giving the people a refund for all the tapes, videos, and books and other materials, blah, blah, blah. And he just goes on. But what's interesting is he calls him out for not giving the money back, but he himself is still a prosperity pastor and still preaches and still holds to the fact that, I don't know how to pronounce his name, whether it's Creflo or Surflow, but whether or not he should be giving the money back, never ever once reflects on himself and whether he himself should be continuing this prosperity gospel. So I just thought it was interesting that you brought up those two points. And here we have this pastor that in one single statement is showing the hypocrisy of this teaching and showing the hypocrisy of other prosperity pastors.
Right. Yeah. It's awkward, right? Like you've been asking for millions of dollars essentially from your community for how many years, and now you've changed your mind, which is good. But how do you actually, like, if this is a new strongly held belief that you have, how do you actually enact that? I would say giving the money back would be the very Christ-like thing to do. but I don't think that we're going to be seeing that anytime soon.
I don't know. I feel like if the name of the guy that conned you is the same as the thing that he conned you out of, you don't deserve that money. I don't like, give it to the homeless. Don't give it back to those people, because they're just going to be swindled by somebody else.
It's kind of like going to a doctor named Dr. Payne and expecting yeah, right. to have a pain-free experience.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I've changed my mind. I now think he sounds more like a James Bond villain.
Ooh,
that's a perfect James Bond villain.
I actually thought that was a typo initially, because I didn't know of this person beforehand, but I was like, his last name is Dollar. Like that's his actual marketed name.
Yeah.
That's a hint. Is it not a hint?
It just goes to show you can't make that stuff up. And he's a prosperity gospel teacher. That's his reality is more interesting.
Yeah. Exactly.
That can't be his real name though, right? Like that's
no,
gotta
but it's
be
his marketed name.
It's got to be a stage name, or, you know, like he changed his name to that for his ministry. Like, no, nobody names their kid Creflo Dollar.
I don't. Right? It's a bit ironic.
Am I wrong?
Right? It almost.
I'm not
going to
say nobody
real name just because of how ironic it is.
Yeah,
but I don't know. So I wanted to take this conversation in a slightly different direction and see how you guys feel about it. But what I was thinking about when I was reading it is that it's always good when people change their minds, like Aaron said. Like it's awesome when someone has a revelation. What I don't get is when they change their minds on this one specific thing and they have this reflection moment and this epiphany, but they don't challenge all the rest of their beliefs. And so what ends up happening is you get this little itty bitty teeny weeny minuscule triumph, but then they still hold to all these, like, how much you guys want to bet that he's still pushing like anti-LGBT messaging and gender stereotype type teaching with men should do this, women should do that. And how damaging do you think his teaching still is, as good as it is that he's taken this one thing off the platter? But that's kind of one of the things I was thinking of. And then the other is that, the the other people who are seeing him change his mind, right? The pastors that have all this negative backlash, they're not, there's no self-reflection. In other words, there's no reflection on their parts on, oh, he changed his mind. What if we're all wrong? Let's all take a look at this. Let's reflect inwardly. Let's do our studies. Let's think about it. It's more like, nope. That's different from what I believe in. I don't even want to touch it, right? You're clearly wrong. And then for him to also change this one little bit about his beliefs and not reflect on the rest of them, I just found that really fascinating. And I want to hear what you guys have to say about that.
Yeah, I have thoughts right away. Is my initial response is like, when and whenever there's this announcement that like this church that is, or this community that's adjacent to you has changed their mind on something, I don't personally remember ever being taught in that community like, oh, here's a moment for self-reflection and here's a moment for growth and let's take this into the word and let's like look at it and evaluate. It's immediately defensiveness, and it's an immediate like, how do we speak out against this evil, like this change, this evil. The other thing I was thinking is that I don't know how this will play out. We'll have to see how it plays out, but I see this as actually a potential for further manipulation, because when somebody that big with that big of a following shows this big act of humility, it's not hard to reach into people's like emotions and their empathy and to get them to feel like in awe of you as like a leader like that, that you've taken the step down. And so there might be actually an onslaught of donations to his ministry now, because people are impressed by this act of humility, even though he hasn't done the act of further atoning for previous behavior. I think that it's possibly, I don't know if it's intentional, but I think it could possibly be a further act of manipulation, and it could draw on more funds. So it's twisted. The whole thing's very twisted, and there's no kind of standard for behavior among pastors, and it's a problem. It is a problem.
I think what's happening both with Creflo and possibly with his congregation is it's like that mental gate of cognitive dissonance just comes crashing down. So he might have made a tiny little bit of progress, but then is that sort of ingrained indoctrination and that instinct kicks in for him and for others. And with vastly varying results, because they've all got their different interpretations of what the Sky Wizard wants, right? So that's what it is to me. But so I wanted to, I know atheists are occasionally accused of taking the Bible out of context. I'm sure both of you have heard that before.
Never,
Aaron? Okay, yeah, no. I don't believe that for a second, but okay. So I wanted to take a closer look at chapter 14 of Deuteronomy. This is the chapter that Creflo uses in his sermon. It's the first verse that he mentioned. So I'll be honest, I didn't know what preceded. I didn't know the content of the previous chapter, but give you a quick snapshot. It contains instruction on what birds not to eat. And let me tell you, folks, owls are off the table. I don't know who told you could eat owls.
What?
Yeah.
Since when?
That's upsetting.
I mean, I've heard about like upsetting. Lobster and yeah, I've never heard about owls. I just can't.
It lists like five different kind of owls that you can't eat. This is also truly the chapter. I know, truly disappointing, right? This chapter also includes the bit about not cooking goats in their mother's milk, which is just weird. And then so we get to the particular chapter and verse that Creflo Dollar uses for his tithing, but then he curiously leaves out the final verse, verse 26. So verse 25 is kind of tithing instructions. So you take your 10%. And it doesn't say give it to the church. It says like take it to the church and like show it to God, I guess. But then verse 26 reads, and I quote, feel free to give me some praise hands, ladies. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen or for sheep or wine or for strong drink, whatsoever thy soul desireth, thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice. So there you have it, folks.
Amen.
The Bible says hallelujah. Grab some beers.
Hallelujah. Amen.
That's what it says. It says go grab some beers with your money. It doesn't surprise me that he left that part out.
Yeah. Well, that's the name of the game here, right? It's like just the choosing the parts that make sense for what you want to project as your business model for your ministry and leave out the rest. And everything else is Old Testament until it's not, which is this case. Yeah. But
until two men want to get married.
This fun little way that you can use the Bible to whatever way you need it to, right? And the whole idea of the Old Testament and the New Testament, you can work that to your advantage. It's actually very, very clever if you know how to use it just right.
That's a really, really good point. And I think from an outside perspective, As atheists and as skeptics, we can all agree that, like, if you have anything that's open to multiple interpretations and that's all you have, you don't have any way of verifying or double checking or bouncing it off of something else, then you can't necessarily determine which of the interpretations is true and which isn't. And I think that that is one of the things that I struggle the most with religion in general, is just how flawed it is in the fact that it is written therefore, right? But then insert my interpretation here. And everybody can have a different interpretation. And the argument comes down to, well, I'm the one that's more inspired by God or whatever. And there's all kinds of different reasons that religious people give for why other people interpret their same scriptures differently. But this is an excellent example. And I think it's a good conversation starter for people, non-religious people to have, or people of different religions, maybe who want to challenge them, to have with Christians, is who are you to say that your individual specific interpretation is correct when you have people left and right believing different things, but they also, like, you're changing your mind all the time, they're changing their mind all the time. It just seems very convenient that God changes his mind at the exact same rate that you do, right? Mm-hmm. Like it just, or, oh, I'm so humble that I got it wrong in the first place.
And coincidentally, often God's mind is like the mind of whatever political party you're a part of.
I was just about to say that
this is a good foreshadowing to our next couple of segments as well. This idea of having a piece of writing that has a vast majority of interpretations and then different claims to that. But we'll talk about that in the next couple segments.
Yeah.
But this is nothing new. So, Susan B. Anthony said that she mistrusts people who know what God wants because it seems to always coincide with what they want. I think I've said that quote before, but it's very it's so apt.
Yeah. I have narrowly met a Christian who disagrees with their theology, with their own theology, because that doesn't make sense, right? Is that they hold a position, but they also hold a position of a theology, and those things are in conflict. I would love to talk to that person who has that disagreement with their theology and their own personal beliefs, because it is convenient. It seems to always line up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we've pretty much, I think we've discussed this one thoroughly enough. I think we can all kind of agree that the hypocrisy is never surprising. The changes of mind are never surprising. It will be interesting, however, to see how things progress from here and how the Christian community can use to respond to this, which is probably to say that it'll be news for a week and then it'll go away. In the meantime, moving on to our next segment, before we get started into segment two, I wanted to take some time to thank everybody, like our veteran viewers especially, and those that you've shared with that have joined us, for helping us get to 10,600 subscribers. If you are watching us now and you haven't subscribed yet, get on it, boy. Once you've subscribed, don't forget to like and ring that bell so that you'll always know when we're posting new stuff. This really, really helps us to get growth and get our information out there. Don't forget, new nonprofits episodes premiere Sunday at 3 p.m. Central Time. I'm sure you already knew that because you're probably watching live. If not, that's when you can catch us live and we'll be in the chat. It's pre-recorded, but you can catch us in the chat and have conversations with your fellow skeptics. Then you can share the link to our channel with your friends, family members, coworkers, anybody. Just share it around. Let's keep growing. We've already done great work. Let's keep it moving. Also, are you aware that the Atheist Community of Austin has another YouTube channel? I'm sure you do. But if you don't, check out AEN, the Atheist Experience Network. That's where we post all of our shows. And it's in a podcast form, so you can catch all of the ACA shows from nonprofits, Atheist Experience, Secular Sexuality. It's like a one-stop shop for all of our shows. So if you want to spend a day binging, or you enjoy listening to us to and from work, I don't know, whatever it is, go ahead and check out Atheist Experience Network to catch all of our stuff. Now, Aaron, what would you say to bringing us into segment two?
I would love to. So this next segment is one that got me pretty riled up, I will say. I think that it's unfortunate that most of us are painfully aware of this story of a 10-year-old child who was a victim of assault and was impregnated in Ohio. And because of Ohio's restrictive abortion laws that don't have any kind of allowances for rape or incest, this poor 10-year-old was forced to travel to nearby Indiana, where she received proper treatment, which was, of course, correctly, an abortion. The response from the right-wing politicians and media has been nothing short of vile, in my opinion. First denying that the case was legitimate, calling it a hoax, laughing at it as liberal fodder. Then after being proven completely wrong when the perpetrator admitted to his assaults and was arrested, we see the response shifted again. Now the focus is on immigration because of the name of the person who had assaulted this child. Well, now we're seeing that shift again. This time, the target is the doctor who cared for the child after she was unable to access the proper care in her own state. And who is pointing the finger at this time? Is none other than the Attorney General of Indiana, Todd Rokita. Rokita appeared on Fox News and, he appeared on Fox News first with a damning accusation and announcement that they were investigating a doctor, Dr. Caitlin Bernard, who provided the compassionate care for this child. A letter was released shortly after accusing the doctor of failing to properly report both the abortion and the claim of child abuse. The problem with all of this was that he had no evidence. He had no evidence for any of this at the time that he made these claims on national television. All accusations were completely unfounded at the time. It was later revealed by the doctor's own attorney that she had followed all the relevant policy, representation, and that there had been no disciplinary action taken by her employer, which means she had done nothing wrong. The attorney has even sent a cease and desist letter to the AG. This is reported on MSNBC. I think we'll also put the link for that below. So what is the point of all of this? It's an atrocious case. Why aren't we all gathering behind this case in a way that we can support the fact that this 10-year-old child has been assaulted and that we can all agree on the fact that this is a horrible scenario? What is the problem with all this? Why are we pointing the finger at different targets on who should take some sort of blame for all this? My answer is one glaring thing. It's the narrative. It's the narrative from the far right. The far right has this idea that they will push, and it's an us versus them, good versus evil, if you will. They will say to themselves and their audience that we are the good guys, and they are the bad ones. Who are they? It is whoever they're pointing the finger to at that time. They'll shift the narrative however they need to remain in position of the good guy. This means finding a scapegoat and never taking responsibility for the negative consequences of the actions that they've taken. But the reality of this story is much worse. The reality is that in a post-Roe world, any person at any age, under any circumstance, is less safe now. And that if we were to acknowledge the reality of that, it might hint at the possibility that the right-wing politicians are the bad guys. And that doesn't fit their narrative. And this just created a brand new target for them. Any doctor providing this compassionate care for someone in need of this medical treatment. I have a big problem with this, and I think you should too. I think that I personally see this as a whole desire to control the narrative in the situation. And I think that creating a scapegoat is a part of a fascist regime. I think that fascism requires a scapegoat. And I can see it happening where they keep shifting it to whatever one fits best for the situation. I am happy to report that there has been an update in this particular case, in that the doctor in Indiana who did give compassionate care to this 10-year-old child is filing a countersuit, or it is at least looking like they are looking into the steps on filing a countersuit for defamation, because what this attorney general did was absolutely wrong. Discrediting a doctor just for the sake of their narrative. It's unethical, and it's a disgusting way to kind of control this whole situation. If this case goes to court, she will win, if this case goes to court, it will have the opposite effect on what the right-wing agenda is at this time. The right-wing agenda is to put a chilling effect on doctors who want to do their job, who have the right and have the authority to treat their patients and with compassionate care. If this case goes to court, it will obviously show that they're willing to fight back on that. If it doesn't go all that way, it still shows that people are willing to push back on this, and that people are willing to fight against this, and that the doctors are within their authority to make these decisions for their patients. So I think they made a major misstep here, because It's not going to work if people fight back with this narrative that there's a good versus evil here. There's much more nuance to this conversation, and there is a darker reality than anyone really wants to talk about, especially the right wing. And the reality is that people are less safe now, especially if you have an emergent situation or if you are somebody who is underage who has been assaulted.
So I'm gonna cut in now because I agree. I think we're both getting a little bit fired up. I'm about to cry. yeah. No, I get it because this is a really tough situation. A 10-year-old girl who was raped and got an abortion to take care of her medical needs there's very few reasons why she should be news at all. It should be taken care of and she should get the care she needs. And it should not be newsworthy. Right. And I'm not saying that she's not worthy of attention. What I'm saying is to put someone's hurt and suffering out there and to exploit it for this kind of attention, I think is atrocious. It's absolutely disgusting. Right. And it puts her in the limelight when she really doesn't even need to be. And I know they're not using her name, which I completely appreciate, but her friends and family can read the stories. She, if she's old enough and if she's paying attention, can read the stories, and they know it's about her, right? That it absolutely takes a private, painful, horrible situation and it makes it nationwide news. So that is bad enough in and of itself. But what I think is really critical about this specific case, like to me, there's sort of like an angle that I think needs to be looked at here. And that is the vehemence with which anti-abortion politicians are willing to attack everyone they can to battle abortion. They're not even looking at what's the situation, what is the little girl going through. They go straight to finding, okay, well, sure, she crossed state lines. Okay, so it's legal there. Okay, so how can we paperwork, the doctor, paperwork. And if you read the letter from the attorney general, the main complaint was that the two federal, I think it was a federal and a state agency, didn't supply proof of the paperwork soon enough for him, quickly enough.
My understanding is that there was like a 3-day time frame, but these are logistics. These are things that people, like, it goes through the process, right? They're backdated. People get the paper.
The government.
They receive papers. They get the date. Okay, the dates, it's put on. Yeah, it's not like these things are like, you know, it's not the same kind of process. So to politicize and publicize nationally on TV these honestly boring logistical things that people do in this line of work where you're filing paperwork and it gets put through. My understanding is that the paperwork, everything was done appropriately. It's just that these things take time to get processed. And this person took this, you know, the AG took the opportunity to jump on it because it's seen so quickly as a new target. Yeah. And this is how, this is who we can pin the blame on. And as long as they're pinning the blame on somebody else, it takes the focus off whether their actions have been harmful. And it completely negates what we're actually should be talking about, is that there's this 10-year-old child. And yes, I think it's tragic that this young girl has been made a poster child for this whole situation. Right. But it's also not uncommon. And that's the part that people need to get. This is not like a one-off that we need to somehow, you know, make explanations for and point our fingers in the right things and cross our T's and dots our I's and make sure. This happens on a fairly regular basis. And that's the story. That's the story that people need to understand. And that is why we need to protect these rights, because this situation happens more frequently than anyone wants to admit. And
Nate, what do you think about all this? People. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay.
That's fine. No, I'm trying to do what more people with penises should do when the topic of whether to have an abortion comes up, and shut the hell up and let the people with uteruses decide. But so I just wanted, if I could maybe briefly shine a light on what Aaron was getting at with the sensationalism and the vilification of the quote unquote other side, and how they love to use these evil words in there, like specifically the Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost was originally quoted saying that he hadn't heard a whisper. Then he called the case a complete fabrication, and then it was confirmed to be true. It goes from, oh, well, he's an illegal immigrant, and all the Fox News viewers are rabble, 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 rabble. And then it's like, now we know it's liberals. They're all like rabble, 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 rabble. And then when it finally comes out that it did actually happen, he changes it again, and he goes and he's thanking the police department for doing their job, getting another dangerous rapist off the street. And it's another thing that galvanizes the right is cop worship, right? So it's just, it goes from one thing to the other. other. And the problem is with the folks that are watching this sort of coverage is as soon as they hear the buzzwords, they stop listening. They don't care about the details of the case. They don't care. They just hear their favorite bad words, immigrants, liberals, go cops, and they just stop listening. So if I could just leave you with one observation is keep fewer dicks in this conversation. And I mean that in two ways.
I don't know. I disagree that you have to have a uterus to have an opinion on abortion. I do think that one person legislating on behalf of the health or wellness of another person is tricky, right? Like that's where I draw the line. So even if you have a uterus and you're anti-abortion, you have no business talking to me about my body, right? And I'm talking to uterus owners.
That's what
out
I was
there,
getting at, yeah.
Right? So yeah, I think that anyone can have an opinion in the conversation. I think the problem is what are we really doing to protect people and their health? So instead of the right having this opportunity to say, you know what, there are opportunities or situations in which abortions are very valid and we're going to at least meet them. I mean, like we could have the argument about they should be valid across the board, blah, 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 blah. And like we can nitpick all the details, but there's an opportunity for them to at least meet us a little bit in terms of
there's
health
an opportunity
and
for
wellness.
Compromise. There's an opportunity for compromise. And that's
and
that
love
is putting
and compassion.
Yeah. And there's the decision which we could meet halfway and put doctors in charge of the well-being of patients rather than making it a moral or a legal thing. Because I mean, there's a lot of disagreement there, but if we can at least put forward that the doctor should be the ultimate authority in this situation and not legislators, and that different legal authorities should not be able to put the fear into doctors that they should be fearful to treat their patients appropriately and the way that they are trained to treat their patients. I think like that's the whole objective in this. Let's say he knew that this was all a sham. The whole point was to put some fear in the doctors and so that they will fall in line, because the narrative is that they are the good guys, they are fighting the good fight, and everyone else is bad, and everyone needs to fall in line or else. It's a warning, right? So I'm really glad that they're fighting back against this, because it shows that there is pushback, that you are not just going to make everybody bend over to your will in the situation, and you're not just going to say these bullshit lines about people that are not true. We're going to fight back on it.
Well, and I'll go ahead, Nick.
I just wanted to briefly touch on one thing that I read. The last article that we're going to share with you folks today is like a state-by-state breakdown of some of the legislation that has been coming into effect ever since the death of Roe versus Wade. And one that I found particularly telling was a Louisiana bill that forbids mail order conception. So it criminalizes people getting contraception through the mail, through a courier, online, from anywhere else. And like, I'm not an American, but it occurs to me that the U.S. Constitution gives Congress the power to regulate commerce. So a state cannot make it illegal for you to shop elsewhere. It's in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution. So again, this is like kind of like Aaron was saying, they're just grandstanding because it's completely unconstitutional. The Louisiana bill is just as impotent as the Indiana AG and as his threats.
Do you want to know what I have to say about that? Nate Smith for president.
I do.
Like as a Canadian, you know more about the Constitution than our own U.S. Politicians and it's ridiculous. But one thing I wanted to say.
To be fair, I had to look it up, but I knew it was in there.
But dang, you did the research, so 10 points for you. But I did want to go back to something that Erin was saying when she talks about the damage done, right? This could so easily have been presented in a different way as evidence for, hey, maybe we do need to rethink this Roe versus Wade. Hey, maybe we do need to talk about this more. Hey, here's an example of maybe where we need to not be too hasty with just burning the whole ship down, right? And just tearing everything apart. Like the way that this heading should have been is, you know, 10-year-old girl rape requires an abortion. We need to rethink our state laws on abortion. Instead, it's girl goes to another state to get an abortion. She does so legally under both states' laws. It was okay that she did it. The doctor did everything right. So where's the angle? Oh, we're going to make sure that the doctor is scrutinized about how she filed her paperwork. Right. Yeah. So
it's a tough situation too, because we want to honor the anonymity of this 10-year-old child. She's a child. I get really passionate about this. I have a 10-year-old daughter. Yeah. So when this issue came up, I get fired up about it. My 10-year-old child cannot ride in the front seat of my car. She's too young. My 10-year-old child cannot babysit someone else's kids. She's too young.
Right.
My 10-year-old daughter stands just below 4'10" and her waist is 22 inches. I measured it not too long ago, just for interest's sake. She's tiny. And the fact that we can't put this human front on it, for good reason, we can't put a human front on it because she's a child. That part gets diminished behind all of this. And it's so upsetting for people who are actually taking the time to think about the situation logically. It's very upsetting.
Yeah. And I think you're right about the fear mongering. That was what I really, if I have any final takeaway from this article, like overall takeaway, it's that the only angle I can really think of in which this is news and in which the AG is trying to make something happen is that fear mongering aspect. Because one of two things happen. Either nothing happens with it and he doesn't prosecute this woman and she goes back to doing her job, but now every other doctor remembers what happened, or even worse, he does prosecute her and that puts even more fear into doctors. So I like what you said, Aaron, about like, well, you're seeing a lot of pushback, you're seeing them fight back, and now it'll kind of empower doctors to like, hey, you know, you can try this bullshit, but we're going to push back. We're going to fight back for our rights to let you guys know we've done the right thing. But when it really comes down to it, a doctor should do that. She shouldn't have to be scrutinized that way. And whether or not she wins her case, that would scare me as a doctor. Even if she won, I would be worried about, well, what BS might I have to deal with? And then so me as a patient, I also have that concern of, is my doctor giving me all the best medical advice or medical treatments available? Or is my doctor afraid of politics and stuff like that? I'm not saying my doctor should feel free to break the law, right?
No, but you're absolutely right. And there's been countless reports of doctors coming out, not just in Indiana, but across all of the different states where there's been restrictions put in place, and the neighboring states, because of situations like this. This girl should have been felt safe to go to the neighboring state where it was legal to get the compassionate care that she needed. But even in a neighboring state, which does not have the same restrictions, they're putting this fear mongering on it. And there's been accounts of these, of doctors who are within that state who are afraid. They're afraid to do their jobs because of this whole grandstanding that's happening right now and this fear mongering. And like a lot of these things, like we had already mentioned, that there was, they have no justification for what they were saying. So I think it's really important that the doctor is taking the time to push back, even though it's an annoyance at this point. It's probably very annoying, the fact that they have to put up with this crap and go and do a counter lawsuit because it makes such a huge statement. Because people who don't look into this stuff further, they might not know. They might just, they will follow the headlines. And if they don't hear the secondary headline that now this doctor is suing for defamation, they're going to be like, oh, so maybe that was what he said, not true. Because that's how it works with these headlines and people who just follow the news. So it's very important that we support these small ground level, or whatever you call it, grassroots efforts to try to push back against this huge narrative. It's huge across the entire states. And like, yes, I am Canadian. And yes, I do follow American politics pretty closely. It's really important that we support those smaller organizations that are pushing back, because that's what we have right now. We need to push back against the bullshit.
Yeah. And before I pass it off to Nate for closing, for his last thoughts before we move on, I do want to agree with everything that Aaron just said. I will add one little tiny thing to that. When you had said that she should have been able to cross state lines to get the medical care that she needed, she's a 10-year-old girl who was raped. She should have been able to walk into any emergency room and get the care that she needed. I know you believe that too, but I really wanted to say that to the audience, because she should have been able to get the care that she needed right in her own neighborhood. That's
absolutely
all I can say. But Nate, I'm going to give the last little bit to you before we move on.
Well, the bright side to this is that you've got progressive states like California, Washington, and Oregon who are now taking steps to enshrine the right to health care in their state constitution, and they're vowing to be havens of sanity in Gilead. So there, if there is a bright side, that's the only one that I can see.
Well said. Yeah. Our next segment does involve another article revolving around abortion, but let's take a quick little break in our conversation so that if you didn't tune into other ACA shows last week, you can take a peek at what you've missed.
You know, when is the right time to bring up that I'm bisexual?
For me, definitely not a first date thing, but before you f- thing. And then if it's a problem for them, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, I hope you enjoyed your chicken parmesan and have a nice night.
Yeah, I understand. I need to have empathy, right? I need to have compassion for others because that's what Jesus wants. But I can't accept your marriage as legitimate, or I can't accept that you having sexual relations with this person is also legitimate. You know, it's like there's terms and conditions to your compassion.
Well, the 19th century, I'm going to do this in a voice, a particular voice. The 19th century is a strange time. Science was coming into its own. Religious people were starting to realize that perhaps the Bible may not be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
If I had a vision of, I don't know, Jesus, some really, really white guy with blonde hair, and this Jesus comes and says to me, you know, come and take my hand, my son, I would think, oh no, someone slipped some drugs into my yerba mate.
Let's go, Jim. He, him, in Idaho. What's your proof of God?
It's in the Bible and it says so.
Okay. You got us, buddy. You got us.
He was on for like 30 minutes for
that. All right, welcome back. We are going to move from a discussion of the Indiana Attorney General to a discussion of the Texas Attorney General. Because apparently attorney generals these days are just a little bit batty and they're doing some crazy things.
Oh,
so
Texas.
First we've got one. I mean, yeah, I thought Indiana was bad. Texas, I think, is going to end up one-upping them. Although there's a lack of the sensationalism in this one. It's still a little bit wacky. So Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is, yes, suing the Biden administration over his attempts to get an order passed for emergency care for abortions in emergency rooms. So I know that we've been talking a lot, like not just we as the nonprofits, but we as like the United States of America have been talking a lot about the Roe versus Wade thing and abortion ever since everything came down. But it seems like it's getting worse. It's kind of steamrolling and it's going to get worse before it gets better. So this is an important conversation to have. Here we have two articles. One is from NPR.org and the other one is from the New York Post. And they both discuss Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton suing Biden over his emergency abortion order. So here's the deal. We have some states where abortions are not legal, some states where it is. And from what I understand, there's no state that says you are not allowed to cross state borders as of right now. But that legislation is in progress to make it illegal to cross state borders to get an abortion. So you have people with different access to medical services based on what state they live in. And this order will make it so that, hey, if it's an emergency and you're going into an emergency room, all emergency care has to be provided. And that would include abortions. So Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton doesn't really like that. He thinks that is not okay. And there's a lot of going back and forth, but this is one more, it's one more tactic. It's one more drop in the pond of all this just let's steamroll over everybody and every little thing that involves abortion. Let's make it as evil, horrible, terrible as possible. To the point where now we have government agencies fighting government agencies. And that to me is just a little bit concerning. What do you guys think this? Aaron, what do you think?
I'm going to get all fired up again about this
one. Uh-oh, I mean Nate. No, go ahead.
treating a person who is possibly in a life-threatening situation in an ER is exactly what an ER is supposed to do. Like, legally, that's their job, is to treat life-threatening situations with the appropriate care. And so this entire case is an attempt to deny the fact that abortion is healthcare and to completely deny the reality of the fact that there are so many situations that could present at an ER where the therapeutic response is to terminate the pregnancy. I don't know if these people just completely failed out of grade 9 health class or like what it is. The nuance is not there. The hyperbolic language is there. You know, they said something like they were wanting to turn every ER into a walk-in abortion clinic. This is, again, this idea to control this whole narrative that people who seek abortions are irresponsible and degenerates. There is no legitimate reason why a woman who, with a wanted pregnancy or not, ends up at an ER where the appropriate response may be an abortion, and it could be life-threatening. And so to deny, to even make any kind of effort to deny that person treatment is necessarily a death sentence. And I don't know why people aren't seeing that. It's my understanding that this point put out by the Biden administration was just reaffirming a current law. So there's nothing new about it. It's just, again, this chance to seize on the narrative and twist it to the agenda of this completely hyperbolic idea that abortion is murder, and that there's no reasonable excuse for why somebody might present in an ER and need to terminate a pregnancy. And it's just, it's frustrating for me, because I mean, I can think of 10 off the top of my head as a woman who has had children, who has had a miscarriage, who has had other issues. I can think of 10 off the top of my head of reasons why I might end up in the ER, and why I did end up in the ER throughout the times of my, childbearing years, where there was an issue, and abortion would have been one of the things that would have been brought up. And I can't imagine a politician stepping into my consultation room with a doctor and telling my doctor when emergency is an emergency, and trying to make try to overstep that authority on my doctor. So to me, it's just absolute bullshit.
Nate, what are your thoughts on this?
I am just getting really sick of seeing middle-aged white men pontificating about what women should do. I mean, I love doing the nonprofits, but it's just like, oh my God, it just keeps going and going and going. Like, when does this craziness stop? And let me just say, for the record, that this is not the first time that this Ken Paxton guy has come across my radar. When I was doing my notes for the show, I was like, I seem to remember a little something. So if we could perhaps put this lunatic lawsuit in context, with another example of Ken Paxton's litigious lunacy, in a move described by the Florida Attorney General's office as batshit insane, in 2021, Ken Paxton sued the states of Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin over alleged irregularities in the election process. So let's, to be clear, legal authorities in Florida described your legal strategy as batshit insane. So the state that brought you "Don't Say Gay" and warning letters to parents whose children might be going on a field trip with a suspected queer thinks you're crazy. That is the yardstick by which Ken Paxton is being measured. It's batshit crazy.
So this just shows how deeply entrenched the battle lines are, like just how separated the divide is. So we talked in the last segment about how, like, oh, you can't make this small compromise for these very specific situations. Like, you don't want any language that will allow, like, you want to basically force a 10-year-old to give birth. Like, that's really how bad this is getting. And then now you have this where it just exacerbates that point even further, where it's not grasping for straws. Well, that's kind of what I want to say, but it's worse because it's more diabolical. It's not just that they're grasping for any little thing. It's that they are fighting tooth and nail to ensure that they don't even give an inch. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is that this has gotten to the point where you can't even right now you can, thankfully, but they're pushing for you can't even in an emergency situation get an abortion. Like, to not want to offer emergency services in an emergency room and to call it a walk-in abortion clinic. Let's unpack that a little bit. First of all, how many women end up pregnant? Of all those women who end up pregnant, how many elect to get an abortion or want to get an abortion? The percentage of just pregnant women who want abortions is not big, people. It's not a lot. We're not all running to clinics to get abortions left and right. There are lots of reasons why women want to get abortions, and we can discuss whether or not the reasons are quote unquote valid. I don't think it's any of my business what another person's reason is, but like, okay, fine, Republican, let's have that discussion. But to then go so far as to say, no, even in an emergency situation, we don't want to encroach on states' rights to say that abortions are included in emergency services. That really shows both of these. If you take both of these articles together, they show a really dire lack of an ability to make any form of compromise whatsoever, to even look at the problem from a medical perspective or from a health and well-being perspective. It's entirely ideological, not even biblical, by the way. It's not biblical, but it's ideological. and political. And it's something now that once they've decided, hey, this is how I feel, it's almost like there's no budging. They'll fight to nail. And this is a really good example of that.
Yeah. It's the whole idea of that, not just going through with a fine tooth comb and looking for the discrepancies. It's finding the smallest speck of dust and then running with it and exploding it into a situation, changing and twisting the narrative so that it absolutely doesn't reflect the reality of what actually happens. It's not scientific. It is not fact-based. It's not evidence-based. It goes against the consensus in medical treatment. And all of it is to try to control this idea that people, like even the whole language around turning every emergency room to a walk-in abortion clinic. What does that idea put in people's minds? A walk-in abortion clinic. Oh, it's some blue-haired liberal who's coming in and using abortion as birth control. That is all part of painting this picture of what the situation is rather than what it actually is. A woman presents to the ER and she reports she's 20 or she's 18 weeks pregnant and she has a fever and she has back pain. And it turns out she has a placental abruption and everything is going awry and she's at danger of, you know, going septic and there's still a heartbeat. What do you do in that situation? What do you do? She is about to have an emergent life-threatening situation. What do you do? Do you call your lawyer? To me, the whole idea of calling looking to the politicians to decide what an emergency is rather than the doctors. That's like if I had a broken leg and I called my fucking real estate agent to ask for advice. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so to me, it's just absolutely overstepping the purview of their whole profession. And it's completely unethical and an act of intimidation. So
you talk about the word abortion
doesn't even appear in the order. It's not even in there.
Yeah. It doesn't.
That's how far they're willing to stretch this.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you made that point because I had that written in my notes. And I know that we get really like emotional and fired up, probably most especially Aaron and I.
Yeah.
So it's easy to miss those little details. But you're right. Like it doesn't even say abortion, but the thought that could be something that occurs, it really shows that there's this, like, it almost feels like insanity to me. Like when I was first writing my notes and considering the articles, what I really wanted to say was like, what? You know, like it doesn't sound logical or rational. But then when you think about it in terms of like the sort of war, Aaron brought up the language and you talk about
it's a denial that abortion is healthcare, right?
One of the other things is calling abortion murder, like the murder of children, right? So now you're saying, oh no, the woman doesn't want to get a medical service performed on her. She doesn't want to have her health and well-being seen to. She actually just wants to kill a child. Like she wants to murder somebody and you're going to let her get away with it, right? And so this way of looking at it, here's my question to you guys. It's hypothetical, but with it being so ideological, how do you even approach it with someone who thinks that? Like we can do the whole, well, if you believe in your heart that abortion is murder, then don't go get an abortion, but don't you dare like regulate or tell another woman what she can and can't do. And I've heard that argument so many times. I've made that argument so many times. When it really comes down to it, what you're telling that person is, well, if I think murder is okay, I should be able to commit murder. And that's not what we think. And that's not what anyone is trying to do here. And so my question to you guys is, how do you approach something like this in a logical way to someone like this person who this is this attorney general's stance? Like I wouldn't even know how to address it. What do you guys
think? I don't want to jump in here again because I know I've been like all over this topic.
It's all yours, yeah. Aaron. The floor is yours.
I in my own personal life, I've never talked to an attorney general about this, but I have spoken to people who are pro-life and who have that idea that abortion is murder. For me, it was just a very calm conversation about reality, about the education. Yes, I do believe the autonomy argument is the best philosophical argument towards it. But when you're talking to somebody who has a pro-life stance, we focus on these conversations about what is actually the reason why most people come into a hospital, maybe not seeking an abortion. Maybe they're there because they have a fever that's way through the roof and they have back pain and they're all these, and then what if the doctor tells them that the safest thing to do is to terminate this pregnancy or you're going to die? Having those conversations and educating people about this different scenarios that actually happen and forcing in the nuance of this, because it is nowhere near black and white. I don't care who thinks it is black and white, nowhere near black and white. I've had people in my own life who have been in that situation, who are pro-life and have been in that awful decision of what to do. And there's no way to describe how horrible and how painful it is. So I don't know. For me, when it's a personal conversation, it's talking about actual stories and what actually happens, and sometimes offering things like suggestions of like statistics and actual stories. That's different than how I would have a conversation with somebody about religion. It is totally different, because I do feel like in this situation, you do have to rely a little bit on the fact of relying on someone to have human compassion. Because if they lack complete compassion, then there's nothing to say about this. If they're completely ideological, then they're not going to change their minds. But for myself, I'm often talking to another woman. I'm often talking to another mother who has a strong position, and I will share with them stories that I've either heard of or have been, you know, intimately involved with somebody that I know personally. And it shifts the dial just ever so slightly. And that's all I can ask for, is just a slight shift of the dial to not be so hard-lined about it, because there is so much nuance to this conversation. And every single time a politician gets on the internet and calls people murderers or calls people abortion activists and deny the fact that they are just giving compassionate care to their patients, they are doing damage towards this conversation, and they are hurting people on their own side, even by denying them the humanity of the situation. So.
Nate, what are your final thoughts on this?
This is going to come up in the fourth segment, but what I think this is a result and a part of what's happening in the United States. Like right now, you've got Clarence Thomas issuing a call to arms for candidate cases to overthrow cases like Obergefell, the right to contraception, even sodomy laws. Because now, by saying that the 14th Amendment and the right to privacy doesn't mean that in this originalist interpretation, he's basically come out and said, hey, bring us your cases. Bring us your wackadoody, batshit crazy lawsuits so that we can put them through and push them through while we still have power. This is what's happening. Mm. And this is why I think even idiots like Ken Paxton are just trying to grab their share of the limelight while they can. Whether or not this gets to the Supreme Court, you know, they're just taking pot shots. They're throwing their shit at the wall and seeing what'll stick.
Yeah, I can agree to that. Yeah. It does cause a further divide politically, and it does make our nation much more fractured than it really needs to be. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you. It does kind of, it feels like throwing darts at a wall, huh? Yeah. So before we move on to our fourth and final segment, I just wanted to throw this out to the audience. Membership of the Nonprofits Channel. You can become a member of our channel for as little as 99 cents a month. So if you haven't already, go ahead and click the join button of the video or on this video, and it will give you access to join us with special chat emojis. So that is super cool. We also have a brand new store. So visit tiny.cc/merchaca to get your favorite items like t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs. And they're coming out with new t-shirts every month. They now have tank tops, which is perfect because I'm a tank top person, as you can tell, not a t-shirt person. So the merch store is really expanding and has some really, really fun stuff. So give it a quick go over, check it out, get yourself some really cool merch. All ACA shows feature a special limited edition item every single month. So if you've already checked one month, just check again every now and again and see what else is popping up there now and again, because you never know, something cool might pop in that you really, really want. So yeah, be sure to check out the merch stores, not just for nonprofits, but for all of our shows. Nate, segment four, take it away.
Segment the fourth. Okay, so a venue says ew to LGBTQ weddings. Now, this article that we have comes to us from Wood TV, but you can find coverage of this anywhere. Basically, a new wedding venue in Michigan would like to remind you once again that you have choices in your bigotry. You don't just have to hate immigrants. You don't just have to hate rape victims or black people. You can still hate queers. So this venue that looks like a refurbished White Castle has a no gay, no trans policy, not because Clarence Thomas needs more reasons to roll back civil rights to the mid-20th century. No. If you thought that, you're way overestimating the intellect of these noble business owners. No, you guessed it. They don't want LGBTQ weddings because their sky wizard said so. Yeah. So I will admit that I am pretty conflicted. So briefly conflicted when this type of discrimination comes up. Like, you don't want to bake me a cake? Fine. I don't want to support an asshole anyway. I'm actually glad these people put their bigotry on display because, as the article reads, this venue has lost potential vendors, they've lost potential customers, and they're facing a lot of backlash for this position. So that's kind of what I want. I want them to be out there so that we can all shop elsewhere and let their hatred wither on the vine. But then whenever I think of that, it reminds me that if you're allowed to discriminate in the public sphere, it doesn't stop at cakes and fancy landscaping. It results in denied marriage licenses, separate water fountains, girls going to school being pelted by rocks, and people being kicked off train cars because they're 1/8 black. So yeah, it's a pretty big fucking problem. I'm not as conflicted as I always end up. It doesn't take long and I'm like, yeah, no, I don't like it, but it has to be this way. What do you ladies think?
I am right there with you. Like I don't like the idea of legislating how people do business, but I also don't like businesses being allowed to be to discriminate against people, right? Like, so it's a balance that I think has to be said. Having said that, like, so I agree that it's complete discrimination and it's complete bullshit. But I also agree that I like that this is news, because as soon as you know that a place is bigoted, racist, whatever the case may be, you are absolutely free not to frequent them. So whether it's a wedding chapel or a choice sandwich shop that specializes in chicken, you can choose, once you know what their stance is, to not frequent them. And it kind of sucks because I would bet they're still pretty booked up by people who are just like them, right? So they're still getting business. Like they're still doing just fine. But my original thoughts were exactly like Nate's, where I'm like, well, at least I know where not to go. Like, so there's the silver lining in that shitty story. My first thought when I was reading this was, I don't like these people. Like, I don't like them at all. Right. And in one of the woman's quotes, Hannah, one of her quotes was, "We love love." And I was like, that's right. Just not LGBTQ love. Do ya? Like, you just, you love a version of love. You love a piece of love. You love the L of love, but you forget about the OVE, right? Like, there's a lot of options when it comes to love, and you love this tiny sliver that fits your description of love. And so I got kind of a little bit caught up on that, because I'm not entirely convinced that that this couple, or even people who have an ideology similar to this couple, I'm not really sure they understand what love is, right? If it's that contrived and that narrow-minded, I'm not really sure you understand what you're saying. You say you love love.
Something that I found interesting about one of the videos that was posted about the situation was that they had made a comment like, this is what we leave, this is what we're raised with, and then they just carried on. Exactly. This is what you were raised with. Have you thought about it more than for 2 seconds? Why do you believe this?
Yeah.
Why is this such a big deal that you're willing to publicly humiliate yourself over your stance? That wasn't one of my main points. My main point here is that so my husband and I are business owners. I do have like this, I feel for the fact of a business owner having something causing them issues, but at the same time, you can be a bigot in the privacy of your own mind, but when you commit to having a business publicly, you should not be allowed to perform your bigotry publicly. Personally, that's how I feel. And in the market of free ideas and the free market of capitalism, if you're going to act like a bigot, you're going to suffer for it. And I'm glad, like Nate had said, I'm glad that people are showing up and it's causing a disturbance for them, because maybe it will have a little bit of an effect on their attitude if they're willing to take a look at that reasoning further than this is what we were raised with, because that's a bullshit reason to believe in something. And I mean, furthermore, right now, this is the current issue that we talk about with, you know, business ethics. Like, should we allow people who are of same-sex marriage to come at these, to have these services? Like 50 years ago, 60 years ago, how is this any different than having a business and having a sign in your window that says whites only?
It isn't. That's right? What I was getting.
Please tell me the distinction.
No yeah.
There is no distinction. No, this is just our current issue. And I will fight somebody over that. This is just the current thing. And it's acceptable to be bigoted over it. And I think that as we continue as a culture and we continue to push back on this in such a way that they suffer, maybe even in just small steps as a business to become profitable, this is how we fight back against this bigotry and we move forward in progressivism. I think that the bills that are out there, again, there's a bit of a breakdown between Canadian and American politics, but I think that anti-discrimination bills that have the language to encompass different kinds of discrimination are important. I think that mm-hmm. falling on old interpretations of old language in old bills is not the way to move forward, and that we need to be willing to look at these things and move forward and not hold to this any kind of originalism or any, you know, honestly, even the idea of precedence, I think, can hold a culture back, especially when we are at a time and age where we know more scientifically and ethically and socially. It should be a common thing that we reassess how we are functioning as a society. So I don't know. I'm kind of glad that they got dinged for it.
Yeah. Jefferson himself said that he wasn't a fan of constant changes to legislation, but that the law should reflect the changing exactly. culture of the times.
Yeah.
But Laura, yeah. I am curious if you're right. I'm sorry. I'll let you speak here, but I want to do, if we can, like a follow-up story to this, because you're saying, yeah, they'll be just fine because all the bigots will rally behind them. And I don't know. I'm not sure if you're right or not. I think they'll probably.
No, I'm not
wither
making.
Die,
I'm not making a claim to what's going to happen with their business.
It'll just
but
be
I do
interesting
know
to
that
watch.
There are some pretty big corporations that are still making plenty of money.
Sure.
Despite yeah. donating sure. to like large amounts to anti-LGBT initiatives, and what I call anti-human rights initiatives, like across the board.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this one specific one will make it. They may be a small enough business that, yeah, their bigotry might and hopefully does kind of shoot them in the foot. I want to take this in another direction, though, and I want to turn the scrutiny onto us for just a minute, because, you know, Aaron had pointed out, like, hey, it's really good that they put their policy out there and they got a huge amount of negative backlash. Yeah. And I agree to a point. But Hannah says in the article, and this is the woman of the couple, the woman who owns the article or owns the wedding venue. She says the hardest part has been the really nasty stuff we've been getting: death threats, malicious words to our children, attacking personal pages, other family members, friends. Right? That sure. Okay, you can say that. But death threats, Nate. So here's the problem. That reinforces the evil liberal. Yeah, sure. It's like us as the other side, we want people to be accepting. We want people to be loving. We want people to not be bigoted. When you're issuing death threats to a person, are you furthering your agenda? Are you making a point that they are in the wrong? No, you're making the only point you're making is that you're in the wrong. You're out of control.
I absolutely agree with you, Laura. I absolutely agree. We need to stand up and make a big fuss about it in exactly the humanistic way that we do it, right? As soon as you cross that line, you're no better. You're absolutely no better than the bigots. Why would you even send a death threat or any kind of anything that would cause threat to the person's personhood? You're absolutely no better than that person. So that is a strict thing that we need to hold ourselves accountable to, as if anybody who is, you know, identifies as a secular humanist, absolutely not. You do better than they do it. And you know, there's power in numbers. You work in a group and you make your statement and whatever. You go stand outside their buildings and you act civil. And it takes longer and it's more frustrating. But that's the right way to do it. As soon as you stoop to that level, you're no better. You're absolutely no better.
Yeah.
That's wrong.
Death threats too far. Would I throw a Molotov at their White Castle wedding venue? No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't even spray paint the side of their building. But if you're asking me if I feel bad,
a voodoo doll or something.
If you're asking me if I feel bad when it happens, honestly, no, I wouldn't do it, but I don't feel bad for them.
I'm not asking whether or not we feel bad. What I'm asking for is like whether we should hold ourselves accountable as much as we hold others accountable. Like if it's unacceptable for group A to do this specific behavior, we should as group B do hold ourselves just as accountable, right? So if we would say like, hey, death threats to an LGBTQ couple is absolutely unacceptable, not okay. Well, death threats to people who are anti-LGBT are just as well. So that's what I'm getting at. Like,
that's why these positions need to be, positions need to become like, you know, achieved through a very like a thoughtful process of looking through these things. You should not be, if you would become a secular humanist based on purely emotional reasons, I don't feel like that's a good reason. You should come to these conclusions because you've looked at this whole thing and you've come to it in a somewhat rational you know, process, so that when you get to this point and you have this position, you can hold it on a very rational reason. And you can argue calmly and rationally for why you hold that position. You don't need to resort to violence because you have taken the time to have a thoughtful process of why you stand in this position and not that one. So I don't know. I condemn violence in these situations. I think that that's no better. You're not making any progress when you act like that.
That's true. Another thing that really got me was their response to this backlash when the owner stated, well, we allow trans guests and gay guests. We don't hate that. They're allowed to come on the property. And it's like, well, good for fucking you. Like, yeah, you can show up.
Here's your medal. We let the white people walk on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Just not come in our building.
Exactly.
How is that different?
We're just going to glare at you all night and we think you should be tortured forever. Yeah, sign me the fuck up for that. That's absolutely ridiculous. That's their version of walk back. Baffling.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that it's almost like an apologetics tactic of like, look, I'm really not all that bad. Like, I have this religious belief that I'm adhering to, so I'm not going to marry you because, see, I wouldn't marry a woman as a Christian, so I'm not going to allow you to marry a woman, but it's only because of my beliefs. It's kind of like the apologetics. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same as I'm not racist because I have a black friend. Mm. Like, how is it any different than that? It's just like, that's a weak attempt to try to like, you know, regain favor in the other side. So no, don't accept it. Ask for more, ask for better.
And they're complete cowards because they're reluctant to put up an official policy forbidding service to a significant portion of humanity. And no, it's like they won't put it up that, hey, we won't do LGBTQ weddings. But at the same time, they've said that they're not going to refund people who put down deposits. So what they're going to do is they're going to take people's money and then they're going to blindside them when they find out they're not allowed to go there. Like, if you're going to be a douchebag, at least own it, put it on your website and let people rally behind whatever side they choose. But that just baffled me. Like, they're
that's
not even
scammy,
going to make it
right?
official. It's so scummy.
They could just put like a rainbow flag on the front of their building and no disclaimer, and they could get a whole bunch of deposits and then not return them. Like, that's just like the making of a scam right there. So that's horrible.
That's also a dishonest business practice. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the way that they want to go, they're looking at not only isolating themselves from their potential client base, they're also potentially breaking laws that could get them in trouble, right? Like, they could be sued for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you'd think. I think I'm pretty sure you can. If you're offering a service under one assumption, and then you allow someone to pay you, and then you change the terms of service after they paid you and refuse to refund them, I'm fairly certain there's legal grounds there to do something about that. I mean, I'm not a lawyer or anything, but that to me it goes above and beyond to a dishonest business tactic. Now you're talking about not just being bigoted, but also being running a dishonest business,
right,
and potentially breaking laws.
Yeah. And that deserves bad public criticism. If you're going to run your business like that, that deserves bad reviews.
Don't ask Brett Kavanaugh what he thinks.
You're right.
So I know we're closing up here in the next couple minutes, and I kind of get this feeling that all of the different articles today kind of touched on sort of an ideological divide that we have going on here, right? Like, each one of them sort of touched on this culture war that we're kind of experiencing. And I don't think it's anything new. I think culture wars have been going on throughout history, throughout all cultures. So it's not surprising, but being stuck in the middle of it can be really distressing. Like, reading these articles was a bit triggering for me. And I had to take my time. And I've noticed that more and more often when I read the news in general, even not for nonprofits, but including when I read articles for nonprofits, I have to take some time afterwards to sort of stress, come back down, get myself centered, because it really feels like we're in the middle of sort of this really vicious culture war. So having said that, what are your guys' final thoughts on the articles in general, or maybe one specifically? What are your guys' closing thoughts? And quickly, because we only have a
couple. I know we were going to really quickly talk about the Defensive Marriage Act or whatever. What was the name of it that it was recently passed? We were going to touch on that as just like a bit of good news.
Yeah.
The bill that was just passed in Congress, it's going to be covered on nonprofits. It's going to
Senate. Yeah, it's going to be on nonprofits later, because it was kind of, it happened after we'd already chosen. Yeah, it just happened today.
Like, hours ago.
Research them and everything. But yeah, so that's good to throw out to the audience, is to keep your eye out. It's the Respect of Marriage Act. And just keep your guys' eye out over the next couple of weeks for more news on that, because that is something that deserves a lot more of our attention than what it's getting. And yeah, thank you, Nate, for bringing that up, because I had intended to bring it up, but it got kind of lost in the fray of the show. Aaron, what's your closing?
It'll be nice to talk about something good for once.
Yeah, no kidding.
I agree.
Yes, and I apologize. I felt fired up this whole episode, so I'm sorry if I no, I'm not sorry. I'm just saying that because I'm a Canadian. And so it is what it is. I'm not sorry. It just is what it is. my final thoughts are just please educate yourself on media literacy, understand where biases come in, understand where narratives are being scripted to try to sway you towards one type of propaganda or another. Be aware of what the story is that people are trying to sell you, and educate yourself about the actual facts of what is actually going on, because half of the stuff that's out, especially about these tricky subjects about like abortion, are not nearly as black and white as you think they are. So just give yourself some time to educate yourself about it, and also be patient with others who haven't taken that time yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to wrap, but I will say this. That discussion can also continue on our social media outlets. And that doesn't mean listen to what other people are saying. Do your own research, but the conversation can continue. And if you'd like to find any of our social media outlets, a lot of the nonprofit hosts, we like to be on the Atheist Community of Discord. So you can find that by going to tiny.cc/ACD Discord. And we also talk a lot on the Facebook page at tiny.cc/FBNP. So those are places where we can continue the conversation, bring up new conversations, and just remember to always do your research as well. Be well informed. If you'd like to support the show, you can become a Patreon at tiny.cc/PatreonNP. So two N's, PatreonNP. And if you're already shopping at Amazon, you can support us by using smile.amazon.com and select the Atheist Community of Austin as the beneficiary. It just helps us out a little bit. We also really value feedback. So if you'd like to tell us what you think, maybe you're in chat, maybe you're not in chat, but you want to send a message directly to us, you can do so at our email at nonprofits@atheist-community.org. Lastly, before we go, visit Atheist Community of Austin's official website at atheist-community.org for the latest of what's been going on. And you can also contact us there. So we have an additional email if you want to go to the ACA versus nonprofits specifically, and it would be at tv@atheist-community.org. So thank you guys all for joining us today. Nate and Aaron, thank you guys for being wonderful hosts alongside me. It was a great conversation, and we look forward to doing so again next time. In the meantime, see you guys all later.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callth.